Rabbi Lewis, I just wanted to... I think the story of Hillel is very fitting when he said that somebody came to Confucius and asked for one thing. Was that, do you want to tell that story?
Yes, it really does resonate. There was a potential convert to Judaism who once approached two great sages, actually in the first century, around contemporaneous with Jesus, Hillel and Shammai. And he had one condition that he set forth for his conversion. He said, I'll only convert to Judaism if you can teach me what your tradition has to teach while I stand, while you stand, or I stand on one foot. That's, I suppose, a good way to limit a speaker. Shammai, who had a certain propensity for impatience, simply chased him away. And, but Hillel said, he said, that which is hateful to you, do not do unto others. The rest is commentary. Go and learn.
Thank you.
The interest in reconciliation and how to work with conflict in speech, I want to give you one personal example. Maybe it's interesting. Of some years ago, I worked, I was in a committee at the San Francisco Zen Center to help the San Francisco Zen Center write up a document for ethics and reconciliation. So the process of reconciliation, process of ethics and all that. And needless to say, it was a very contentious committee to be on. And there were times when we kind of, struggled over all kinds of things about... I remember one day in particular, we were at odds, myself and another person and myself, around the wording of something or a certain concept that we felt should be in this document on ethics and reconciliation. And it got somewhat tense and heated between us. And we were different points of view. And the meeting ended, and we both left and went away for the week. And during the week in between, I spent time reflecting on what had happened during that time. And that's one of the things that you do in Buddhist practice. You kind of you're mindful of both what's going on in the present, but also a period of reflection, kind of reviewing and trying to kind of reach into the depths of what was going on in a particular event, with the intention behind it, with emotions, the feelings, the reactions that might have existed there, as we try to clarify it. And so I was kind of looking in this, and one of the... And so by the time the next meeting was going to be, a week later, I was ready to ask for forgiveness, or apologize for my role in that conflict. And so I was going to, as soon as the meeting started, I was going to kind of, as soon as I saw this guy, I was going to say, oh, by the way, I wanted to apologize for my behavior last time. And so I showed up, and before I can get a word out, he did that for himself. He apologized for his contribution, what he did. He took responsibility for it. And here we have two people disagreeing about who's responsible. And I thought that was quite lovely. And that is one of the encouragements in Buddhism around reconciliation, is to begin by always being clear about what your responsibility is. Don't hold back, and don't protect, or deny. But even if it's a small amount that you contributed to the situation, always be willing to confess it and put it out there. And that's helpful all around for everyone to work for reconciliation.
Does anybody else want to say anything?
Yeah. No, I'd like to add a personal story to this. We've all had trouble with mother-in-laws. part of the journey that I think we have to make is to turn our mother-in-laws into mothers. And it's an arduous journey, but it's a very fulfilling journey. And it is possible. Now, I just want to say that when my mother-in-law was my mother-in-law, she was a very annoying person. It was very, very difficult to be compassionate to her. And knowing that being empathetic and compassionate was the key to my, living in divine consciousness. I tried to practice it, and it wouldn't come. We parted many, many years ago without either one of us greeting the other. And she went away to India, and I heaved a big sigh of relief that I won't see her for 6 months. But I knew that this was not how I wanted to be, regardless of how she was. And I didn't like how I felt. So very similar to, you know, your experience, I reflected, I meditated. And my inner voice told me that love was the answer. You know, in the Sri Guru it says, Jin Prem Ki Ho Tinhi Prabhayo. You know, those who love attain God. And people love God but hate human beings, and that's the irony of it. The Guru also says, Balihari Kudratvasya. God exists in his human beings. And if you have to love God, the only way to love him is through human beings. So I needed to see God is my mother-in-law. That was my challenge. And difficult as it was, I thought love when I thought of her. And I did it. They say that 40 days is a magical number. You know, if you do something for 40 days, it kind of starts a new groove in which it is easy to kind of start a new path. So for 40 days every morning, I told myself every time I meditated that I love my mother-in-law. And every pore of me rebelled as I said that. But I said it anyways. I said it anyways. I reflected on it. And I did nothing else. And she was in India. And 40 days later or thereabouts, my husband happened to call her and she asked for me. I'm like, whoa. Yeah. Okay. So I get on the phone and I say, hi. And I could say mama. I said, hi mama. She says, I wanted to tell you that I bought an emerald earring for you, a set of emerald earrings for you. I'm like, oh my God, what happened? Why? It's not my birthday or my anniversary. She said, well, I had gone to the jeweler to look for something, and I saw these earrings, and I just thought of you, and I thought that they are a befitting gift for my daughter. I realized then that you don't have to do anything. You know, there is a word called sankalp. I don't know what tradition it is from, but it means thought. When the thoughts change, the environment changes. And thoughts have a power of transmitting themselves across any distance and creating transformation there. I absolutely promise you every word of this is true. I'm not making it up. I did nothing. I wrote no apology. I said absolutely nothing. I just meditated on love. And I tried to the best of my ability at that moment to feel love towards her. And that was the turning point in our relationship. And I'm really pleased to say that I'm so blessed to have a mother again in my life. She lives with me.
To offer a perspective that I failed to offer earlier about the Baha'i teachings, and that is its commonality with religions on a spiritual level. However, on a social and more global perspective, it differs. And in one way it differs profoundly is that there is the prerequisite for universal peace that there is an auxiliary language that would be developed, that all people would speak this language in addition to their native language, in order that there would be greater understanding, easier closeness established, and essentially just mutual understanding between everyone. And that's among the other social principles of the Baha'i teachings. That's one that's at the forefront, in addition, in promoting an all-inclusive world-embracing society.
Thank you. I'd like to ask if... Oh, did you want to say something?
Okay, no worries. Okay, I think all religion emphasizes love. Even Confucius also emphasizes love. But Confucius emphasizes humanity more than love. Humanity is the quality of a human being. Mm-hmm. Humanity is responsibility, people to people. The more important than love. Love, I think, is very important because if you have no love, we can get it together. But how to keep the love going, I think empathy is very important. Empathy. emphasis make this love not go too much. Sometimes love go too much. You love other people feel depressed. It's like parents. Parents love children too much. The children. So emphasis make love smooth. Make love peaceful. Make love don't go too much. Okay. So maybe we don't, some people don't need everybody love him too much, but they need everybody respect him. Mm-hmm. So respect is empathy. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like you to, whoever would like to offer a practice from your tradition that could involve the audience, if anyone wants to participate, a practice from your tradition that helps you to cultivate the kind of speech that you've all been speaking about. Reverend Butcher?
I'd like to do this and do it now because it involves standing, and I think maybe you're ready to stand. In every Episcopal church on every Sunday, we do what's called sharing the peace, and it means we turn to one another and we say, "Peace be with you." And it's a very old custom. We learned it from you, Sheldon, and from the Jewish tradition of saying shalom. It's practiced among the Muslims. They say salam. And those who speak English say peace, and whatever your language is. Let's just turn to one another and greet another with peace, with a handshake or a hug, whatever is appropriate. We had one time in Menlo Park, we had a joint service between Holy Trinity Episcopal Church and the Macedonia Baptist Church, and we shared the peace, and I said, I tried to get it to stop, and I couldn't stop it.
Thank you.
So we'll go to something else.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to share anything from your practice that you think would help to cultivate speech? Yeah, okay.
Do you guys feel up to it? There's a mantra called Vaheguru, and what it means is just wonder, just the wondrous creation, wondrous Lord, just wonder. When all words fail, there is just wonder. So Rama is sitting there. I'd like her to join me if you can, and we're going to say Vaheguru, and if you could repeat after me, and then make an endless circle of it, and we'll just do it for a few seconds. Close your eyes and take a deep breath. Vaheguru. Vaheguru. Everybody.
Thank you.
Actually, I wanted to share a Jewish practice, which is difficult to duplicate here, but I just thought I would share it with you. I mentioned earlier that Judaism, maybe more than a, is so filled with words, too many words sometimes, and translates into garrulousness sometimes. But I think one of the most potent practices in to guard speech, to do Shmirat HaLashon, is to surround oneself with holy words, and with good words, with uplifting words. And so, whether they be words of prayer, thanksgiving and praise, or whether they be words of study, even if the study involves studying, I'm thinking of Talmudic passages filled with disputes between Hillel and Shammai and others, but respectful disputes, that if one, I think this is the advice of the rabbis, that if one surrounds oneself and makes a daily practice of reading and focusing on and praying sacred words, and you frame your day that way, with whatever is possible, then it's hard to get up from that and to really misuse speech. I mean, it's not impossible, clearly, but it's hard to put down a text of prayer or a sacred text and then to abuse others with words. So I think wall-to-wall good words helps make misuse of speech all that more difficult.
I asked by him about what means peace in Chinese. Mm. Two words together, compound words. One is harmony, one is equality, because everybody is equality and harmony. This is peace.
Mm-hmm. So someone earlier talked about, used the word incarnation or embodiment, and one of the kind of core practices in Theravadan Buddhism that goes to with speech and all kinds of activities is to be in your body, to be in our bodies. And it doesn't take a lot of looking around in society to realize that, or in ourselves, how easy it is to get caught up in our words and lose ourselves in talking, to lose a touch with ourselves. And in the meditative traditions of Buddhism, the idea is when you speak, to speak while you're still in touch with your physical being, with your body. And the advantage of that is that our bodies give us a lot of information about what's going on, about our reactions, our impulses, our motivations. When my stomach starts getting tightened up, or my shoulders tightened up, when I'm speaking, that's often an indication that I need to look at something and not get carried away with what I think is important to say, but spend some time reflecting back on myself and what's going on. And the highest possibility in this kind of embodiment of staying in the body, being in touch with what's going on in the body as we speak, is that what could be called in Western terms, the ego disappears. And so we're talking in a way that's quite selfless, but rather something is kind of almost like something is moving through us, in channels that are very different than the channels that our self-centeredness would come through.
Amy, would you share with us about the month during the Baha'i calendar that's devoted to speech?
Well, thank you for asking. Actually, in the Baha'i teachings, there is a Baha'i calendar of 19 days and 19 months. It's essentially centered around the lunar calendar. And each month is entitled A Quality of Our Creator. And the month of speech is in November. And actually it starts on November 23rd and lasts for 19 days. And essentially we start out each period of those 19 days. They're called a feast. And essentially it's a spiritual feast where we come together and focus on devotions, prayers from the various major religions. And then we have sort of Baha'i business, and then we have a social portion. But essentially, it's a spiritual gathering and a spiritual feast. I'm not sure if that's answering your question. And typically with each theme, such as the next feast that's coming up, is on the 31st of July, which is Saturday, and it's the Feast of Perfection. And typically the party or the individual arranging for that feast finds among the volumes of Baha'i writings passages that relate to that spiritual topic. And so during that bunch of speech, we focus on things. In the Baha'i writings, it's also called utterance a lot. We refer to utterance. Typically, there are writings that are centered on wisdom that are reflected during that period, and then the power of the words of God. And I think we've all talked about some different dimensions of that. The practice that I wanted to share relates to, Baha'is typically get together for all sorts of reasons. One of them happens to be something we call deepening, when we want to go deeper into a topic, such as like today. And we'll draw on different writings, different spiritual texts, and various things. And today I felt it important because it's really an honor to get together with a group from different religious backgrounds and be so united. And I felt deep in the core of my being earlier this morning that this is really an honor and a privilege to be a part of this group and for us to come together and be in such a united manner. So the reading that I thought I wanted to share in this deepening effort is this, and it's from the prophet founder of our faith. And he says, "O children of men, the fundamental purpose animating the faith of God and his religion is to safeguard the interest and promote the unity of the human race, and to foster the spirit of love and fellowship among men. Suffer it not to become a source of dissension and discord, of hate and enmity. This is the straight path, the fixed and immovable foundation. Whatsoever is raised on this foundation, the changes and chances of the world can never impair its strength, nor will the revolution of countless centuries undermine its structure. Our hope is that the world's religious leaders and the rulers thereof will unitedly arise for the reformation of this age and the rehabilitation of its fortunes. Let them, after meditating on its needs, take counsel together and through anxious and full deliberation, administer to a diseased and sorely afflicted world the remedy it requireth."
Thank you.
So that, we believe, is our role and all of our roles.
Thank you. Did you want to share something?
I have a closing ritual, so maybe we'll save that until the closing, but it's very much like the passing of the peace, because at the end of an hour of silent worship, Quakers close the meeting by shaking hands in all directions, because someone has to start it, but from there on it's completely non-hierarchical. It just spreads in all directions, and that's how I suggest that we close. But I'd like to mention to you that I know a young man, one of our Stanford students, I think he's now going to Berkeley, who has no hands. As a biomedical engineer, I'm a little appalled at that, because we should be making prostheses that he can use, but he gets by without them. And in fact, he said, "Whatever it is that makes us human, it's not the opposable thumb." Mm. Nor is it a facile tongue. When Quakers actually try to write down what it is they do, we hardly ever mention quaking. But the quaking part comes in because you never have the right words, no matter how good you are at it. The truth is always larger than that. And we are asked to be willing to speak even though we know that's the case, and we struggle to find those words. And often our tongues are like no tongues at all, just as the young man has no hands and still shakes hands with all of us when we close.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'd like to open things up, unless somebody else has something to share, for the audience to ask questions of anyone on the panel. And we have a mic for that.
We're going to use this one. Mm-hmm. You guys get to play with the wires.
Thank you very much. It was a very, very inspiring early Sunday afternoon. I have one major question, though. As nice as it is for all of us to be united in harmony, holistically, inclusively, I'm concerned that we're really preaching to the converted here, and that it deserves at least a minute to contemplate not the important easy connections among us, but those that are outside of the room. Last night at the San Francisco Jewish Film Festival, there was a major piece, several pieces of film that were made before Mel Gibson's movie, but were clearly reflections about that theme. And what I'm wondering about are the groups that aren't in this room, really. Not the Baha'i that left Iran because they were persecuted by other Muslims. Not engaging Buddhists and engaging Jews and engaging Christians, but the fundamentalists who think they have a single message that's quite inclusive. A modest proposal would be this is a great beginning, but that it's equally important to reach out in harder directions.
I thank you very much for bringing that up, because I was going to, I'll say it now instead of at the very end. I was going to say that I hope everyone here, having experienced this afternoon listening to people from different traditions, would reflect on their own tradition and reach out to someone in your neighborhood, someone in your workplace, someone in your children's school, that you not just go home and talk to your friends, but that you actively seek another person to engage in interfaith dialogue with. I saw this at the parliament, where there was a man from Burma living in, I believe it was Tennessee, and there was a Christian, and they wound up in dialogue with each other. And they had a lot of disagreements, but they became very close friends in this active engagement. And so I encourage everyone here to do that with at least one other person. So thank you for bringing that up. Any other questions? Yes. Can we? Would you like the mic?
Well, I wanted to share something from an interfaith workshop I went to recently, which impressed me. And a woman was speaking about bringing together, I think, Muslims and Jews shortly after 9/11, or Muslims and Christians and Jews, I'm not sure, something like that. And she said they started out their encounter by having the groups separated and coming up with a list of things that they did not like being heard about themselves to communicate to the other group. For example, stereotypes or hurtful words or things that would be disrespectful in their culture. And that's kind of how they greased the wheels, was to, you know, sort of, instead of saying what, you know, your religion or your group aims for, to let other people know what is hurtful. And it seems to me that might be one that would be effective, dealing even with people where you don't have much agreement, to start with communicating about what you really would not appreciate being heard about you. So, and then we have tools to be respectful of the other groups.
Thank you. Do you want any comment from anybody, or just share?
Okay. There's any comment, I appreciate.
Yes? Pass the mic down.
Returning to your comment earlier, you know, we got to be realistic in all of this, and what can we do? And not just preaching to the choir. But there's a zillion ways to do it, and one of them is how we use the media and how we use communication. And so I just want to acknowledge someone here who's doing this very significant work in this area, and that's Jean Ramosiotti. She has a program on cable television called Spirit Talk with Jean. And she brings together people from different backgrounds to discuss specific issues. And you want to talk with Jean and you want to listen to her program, you can listen to it if you live in Atherton, East Palo Alto, Menlo Park or Palo Alto. It's just that reach. But she's doing it, you see. And that's her way. Well, say something.
Amy and Shelley have been on it, and John.
Say a word about you.
Oh, well, I started it with the new millennium coming 4 years ago, not knowing I'd be doing it 4 years later, to focus on where was religion and spirituality going in the next 100 years. And then in the process, 9/11 happened, and I have quite a few shows with Muslims, Jews, and Christians on it. And Shelley's been on it, Amy's been. So I just continue to invite people from all different religions, and any of you who'd be interested in coming on the show, let me know. And I'm just going to continue, and we just have just meshed together so many different religions, and we all get along so well when we have these panels on the show. So thank you, John. And thank you for doing this.
Thank you. You're welcome. Any other questions? Or did anyone have, you want to have a comment?
I have a comment. I hope encouragement, because I too labor with that same question in being up here. And one of the things I'd like to offer is similar to what Mirka said. Because we are all so extremely busy, I think we have to keep ourselves encouraged, and one of the ways that to do that is to do those activities that are that we're able to sustain. And one of the things my husband and I have decided to do, for example, in our little neighborhood there in Morgan Hill, is that on the fourth Sunday of each month, we're going to do brunch and prayers. And essentially, we're going to focus the prayers around a theme. We'll initially start with world peace. We'll probably start with praying for families, for people who are ill, and we're going to welcome in text from any of the religions, but simply to get together on a point of unity and believing that there is this same impact around the world, just as the story was told about her mother, that gathering in the name of our Father, in the name of God, has an impact. And that's essentially the belief that we're going to put into action. And I would encourage all of us in our daily activities and things that we adopt in order to help solve these problems around the planet, that we do things that we can sustain.
Thank you.
I can't remember who it was, but during the introduction, someone was connected with the Listening Project. I think it was called the. I'd love to hear more about that.
Compassionate Listening Project. There's a very devoted woman by the name of Leah Green, who lives in the Seattle area, who conceived of, she's got many partners now, of a project, an interfaith project that was focused mainly on the Middle East, actually, and brought people together who trained, really, in being compassionate, active listeners, to go to the Middle East and to travel throughout the West Bank and through Israel, and to meet the whole spectrum of those who often are opposed to one another, even in deadly and lethal ways, and to listen deeply to them, and to be a presence, and to let the act of listening without judging be a tool for healing, and maybe to teach those skills to others. So. I actually haven't been in one of those delegations personally, but I've heard the most extraordinary things and seen there are some CD, some videotapes of these journeys that are available through the Compassionate Listening Project. If you want, I can help connect you to those.
I want to thank you for offering yourselves to us. It was really, really beautiful. From a personal point of view, I went on a 10-year search trying to find out about how best to develop myself. And I wish I had the environment where this was happening, when I was going through the search, because it's so nice to be so confused, you know, about, oh, I want to be a part of that, I want to be a part of this, and then I feel like I'm a part of all of you, which is really great. My question is concerning spiritual development in your lives through your faith, and I just wanted to find out what practice you do to develop personally, spiritually in your lives.
Central to my life is meditation practice, and so I try to meditate every day.